Okay, we'll be in chapters 3, 4, and 5 of Judges. We found that Israel had fallen into sin and idolatry once more, and they were delivered by Barak and Deborah, who defeated Jabin, the Canaanite king, and his armies, who were led by Sisera. We also studied about Sisera fleeing when he realized his army was defeated, and he ended up in the encampment and in the tent of Jael, who ended up giving him some buttermilk. He fell asleep, and she ran a tent peg through his temples and pegged him to the ground. In Deborah's song that was in chapter 5, Deborah sings about Jael removing Sisera's head. So apparently after she killed him, she chopped his head off. So now all this is done, and Israel has had 40 years of peace. Now in chapter 6, we find the Israelites are right back doing evil in the sight of the Lord. It sounds like a broken record. And so the Lord is punishing them, this time with an invasion of nomads. These people were Midianites, the Amalekites, Ishmaelites. These people were nomadic desert dwellers. They lived in tents mostly, but they did have some towns and villages. As far as the Midianites are concerned, I'm sure that they had some remembrance passed down from their generation to generation, a hatred of the Israelites. I think it was in Numbers. I'm not positive, but I think it was in Numbers that that God told Moses to destroy the Midianites. And if you remember, they drew some of the Israelites away, and one of the daughters of the Midianites was brought into the tent of one of the Israelite sons, and Phinehas, I believe it was, that ran a spear through the both of them. Anyway, there were 23,000 Israelites that died because of the sins of these that these Midianites caused them to sin. And so God told Moses to destroy the Midianites. And so when they didn't do that, they left the male and female children and all the women alive. God got mad at them and told them to destroy all the male children. And so they did that. So I'm sure there was some serious hatred passed down from generation to generation with the Midianites. And so they have invaded Israel from the east of Jordan. And they have devastated the lands all the way to the Mediterranean Sea around Gaza. And they would show up during harvest time, and they would just literally plague the Israelites, taking everything, their grain, cattle, leaving them with absolutely nothing. We'll be reading in a few moments in Judges 6, tells us that they were like the grasshoppers for numbers. They were uncountable. There were so many. But they swept the land all the way to the sea at Gaza. And, of course, down in Gaza, you remember that is the plains of Sharon. Very, very fertile valley along the shore of the Mediterranean Sea. We sing about the Rose of Sharon back in one of our songs. But they took everything. They left nothing. the Israelites had to flee their towns and their villages, and they lived in caves and dwelt in the hills, mountain country, to get away from the Midianites. It's no wonder that they were in such grief and they were so destitute. They finally kept praying to the Lord and asking for help. So today we're going to be introduced to a man named Gideon. And most of us know his story pretty well, but there are a few questions that we can ask. Where was he from? Anybody know what tribe he was from?
Levi?
Anybody know?
She said Levite.
No.
Where Gideon was from, what tribe?
Stacy said the tribe of Levi.
Okay. Well, we'll find out what tribe he's from as we get into this. But he was actually from the tribe of Manasseh. And his town was just east of where he came from, was just east of Bethel. Which is actually in the tribe of Benjamin, I think. But he was just east of there a few miles, and it was part of Manasseh's territory. Was he a faithful and believing Israelite? Did he believe in God? All this time, you know, peace had 40 years, but then they started getting into this Baal and Asheroth and worshiping the idols and gods of the Canaanites. Why was he chosen? Kind of an interesting question. Okay, who was the prophet that was raised up and condemned the Israelites during this time? We really don't know who that was because he was not by name. The Jews have a tradition that he was Phinehas, but Phinehas was long dead by then, so doesn't say who he was, but he was raised up by God, and he condemned Israel for their sins. Question, do you think that the mothers and the fathers told their children anything about the wonderful things that the Lord had done for the Israelites in the past? And we're going to find out that Gideon knew about that, but did the children of Israel teach their children about God and all the wonderful things that he had done in the past? Here they're falling into sin and corruption. So apparently there was not a very clear and precise story that passed down from generation to generation. What do we do about our own children? Are we successful in raising them to believe in the Lord? You know, we're seeing a falling away right now in all the churches, religious organizations and whatnot like that. How can we, once we tell them about the Lord, and we raise them in his faithful servants, how can we ensure that they stay faithful? Once they grow up, have families of their own, leave their home, perhaps we've done our job, but have we done it good enough for them to remain as faithful servants as they go out through the world? Let's start in verses 1, Judges 1, verses 1 through 6. Sharon's going to read that for us.
Then the sons of Israel did what was evil in the sight of the Lord, and the Lord gave them into the hands of Midian 7 years. The power of Midian prevailed against Israel. Because of Midian, the sons of Israel made for themselves the dens which were in the mountains and the caves and the strongholds. For it was when Israel had sown that the Midianites would come up with the Amalekites and the sons of the east and go against them. So they would camp against them and destroy the produce of the earth as far as Gaza and leave no sustenance in Israel, as well as no sheep, ox, or donkey. For they would come up with their livestock and their tents. They would come in like locusts in number, because they and their camels were innumerable, and they came into the land to devastate it. So Israel was brought very low because of Midian, and the sons of Israel cried to the Lord.
Lee, can you read 7 through 10?
Yes, there she goes.
Now it came about when the sons of Israel cried to the Lord on account of Midian, that the Lord sent a prophet to the sons of Israel, and he said to them, "Thus says the Lord, the God of Israel, it was I who brought you up from Egypt and brought you out from the house of slavery, and I delivered you from the hands of the Egyptians and from the hands of all you oppressors, and dispossessed them before you and gave you their land. And I said to you, I am the Lord your God. You shall not fear the gods of the Amorites in whose land you live, but you have not obeyed me."
So now he's condemning the Israelites for their sinful ways. Carol, would you read 11 through 18?
Okay. Then the angel of the Lord came and sat under the oak that was in Ophrah, which belonged to Joash the Abiezrite, as his son Gideon was beating out the wheat in the winepress in order to save it from the Midianites. And the angels of the Lord appeared to him and said to him, "The Lord is with you, O valiant warrior." Then Gideon said to him, "O my Lord, if the Lord is with us, why then has all this happened to us? And where are all his miracles which our fathers told us about, saying, 'Did not the Lord bring us up out of Egypt?' But now the Lord has abandoned us and given us into the hands of the Midian." And the Lord looked at him and said, "Go in this your strength and deliver Israel from the hand of Midian. Have I not sent you?" And he said to him, "O Lord, how shall I deliver Israel? Behold, my family is least in Manasseh, and I am the youngest in my father's house." But the Lord said to him, "Surely I will be with you, and you will defeat Midian as one man." So Gideon said to him, If now I have favor in thy sight, then show me a sign that thou who speakest with me. Please do not depart from here until I come back to thee and bring out my offering and lay it before thee." And he said, "I will remain until you return."
Ophrah was a small town east of Bethel in Manasseh territory. I was over between Bethel and east towards Jericho and the plains of Moab. The Abiezrites, kind of hard to pronounce those, that was actually a clan name of which Gideon belonged. Apparently they were a small clan that didn't have a whole lot of power in their own area. Gideon now has asked God, "Well, why in the world have we been, of all these wonderful things that you have done for us?" So he has heard the stories, the wonderful things that God has done for Israel. So he's not a stranger to those things. So he now is asking God about these things. He's going to run into this angel of the Lord, and we'll find that out. Di, you want to read 19 through 27?
Okay. Then Gideon went in and prepared a kid with unleavened bread from an ephah of flour. He put the meat in a basket and the broth in a pot and brought them out to him under the oak and presented them. And the angel of God said to him, take the meat and the unleavened bread and lay them on this rock and pour out the broth. And he did so. Then the angel of the Lord put out the end of the staff that was in his hand and touched the meat and the unleavened bread, and fire sprang up from the rock and consumed the meat and the unleavened bread. Then the angel of the Lord vanished from his sight. When Gideon saw that he was the angel of the Lord, he said, alas, O Lord God, for now I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. And the Lord said to him, peace to you, do not fear, you shall not die. Then Gideon built an altar there to the Lord and named it, the Lord is peace. To this day, it is still an Ophrah of the Abiezrites. Now the same night came upon about that the Lord said to him, take your father's bull and a second bull, 7 years old, and put down the altar of Baal, which belongs to your father, and cut down the Asherah that is beside it. And he built an altar to the Lord your God on the top of the stronghold in an orderly manner, and take a second bull and offer a burnt offering with the wood of the Asherah, which you shall cut down. Then Gideon took 10 men of his servants and did as the Lord had spoken to him. And it came about, because he was too afraid of his father's household and the men of the city to do it by day, that he did it by night.
Okay, thank you, Di. So what Gideon has done here now is he's talked to this angel of the Lord. And some of the, when he brought back his offering of the kid and some unleavened bread, put it on the altar, some of our renditions say that he poured out the broth. Others say that he poured it on top of the offering. Anyway, the angel touched it with his staff and it was consumed. And so Gideon knew that he was talking to an angel of the Lord. Some of the translations say that, and then the angel immediately disappeared out of his sight. We know that Gideon owed God his complete trust without visible proof. And Gideon acknowledged that God had already given his word, but Gideon still had his doubts, and he wanted to be sure of God's plan. But God was patient with him and gave him the sign that he requested. So we'll look at that as Dean reads through verse 40.
When the men of the city arose early in the morning, behold, the altar of Baal was broken down, and the Asherah was cut down that was by it, and the second bullock was offered on the altar that was built. They said to one another, who has done this thing? When they inquired and asked, they said, Gideon, the son of Joash, has done this thing. Then the men of the city said to Joash, bring out thy son, that he may die, because he has broken down the altar of Baal, and because he has cut down the Asherah that was beside it. Joash said unto all that stood against him, will you contend for Baal or will you save him? He that will contend for him, let him be put to death while it is yet morning. If he be a god, let him contend for himself, because one has broken down his altar. Therefore, on that day, he called him Jerubbaal, saying, let Baal contend against him, because he's broken down his altar. Then all the Midianites and the Amalekites, the children of the east, assembled themselves together. They passed over and encamped in the valley of Jezreel. But the spirit of Jehovah came on Gideon. He blew a trumpet. Abiezer was gathered together after him. He sent messengers throughout all Manasseh. They also were gathered together after him. And he sent messengers to Asher and to Zebulun and to Naphtali, and they came up to meet them. Gideon said to God, if you will save Israel by my hand as you have spoken, behold, I'll put a fleece of wool on the threshing floor. If there be dew on the fleece only, and it be dry upon all the ground, then shall I know that you will save Israel by my hand as thou hast spoken. And it was so. He rose up on the morrow, he pressed the fleece together, wrung the dew out of the fleece, a bowl full of water. Gideon said to God, let not thine anger be kindled against me, and I'll speak but this once. Let me make trial, I pray thee, but this once with the fleece. Let it now be dry only upon the fleece, and upon the ground let there be dew. God did so that night, for it was dry on the fleece only, and there was dew on all the ground.
So Gideon, even though he owed God his allegiance and his faith, he was unsure about this, and so he asked God for a sign. And when God gave him that sign, he pushed God a little bit more and asked God for another sign. And God was patient with him. This is something that I'm sure that the first time that Gideon had ever seen done, and so he was a little unsure of himself. I don't think it's wrong to ask God for more information when we're not sure of what he wants us to do. I think God expects that and doesn't have a problem with that. We may confuse an act of folly with an act of faith. But we do, I think we dishonor God, though, when we continually ask him for more proof when he's already given us his word. We need to remember that he's given us many signs in the Bible. We have that available. But I think God also understands our weaknesses and provides us with the way that we should go. So there's nothing wrong with asking God for additional information, to ask God to answer our prayers. God understands that. God, I think, is willing to go the extra mile for us and give us the direction we need to go. So that's about it for this chapter. I hope somebody has some questions and that we can talk about a little bit. We've only had a half hour tonight, but I only wanted to do one chapter, and then we'll do chapter 7 and 8 together to next week and talk about Gideon and some of the mistakes that he makes. And we'll talk about a man called Abimelech, who was actually the first king of Israel. Kim got ahead of me and gave my thunder away last week when she said exactly what I was going to say next week. So anyway, we'll talk about him and go from there. So
Ron, I'm real impressed with Joash, Gideon's father.
Yes.
He at times he seems to show just incredible devotion to God and strength. And you see him saying, who is it that has to defend Baal? If he is really God, let him defend himself. So that's an amazing statement, but that's a statement that came from the man who had built the altar to Baal.
Yes, that's right.
So, you know, that I think what is true of him is true of all of us. We have times of great strength, and they're interspersed with times when we're weak. And that is not to say, whenever we have a weak period, that we've somehow given up on God. We just need something to bring us back. So I'm impressed with him. I'm impressed with Gideon. He asked God for three signs. First, he asked the angel for a sign, and the angel provided it. Then he asked God for two signs. And really what God is asking Gideon, Gideon is afraid.
Yeah.
He was afraid of the men of the city because he knew what would happen. So he did what he did, cutting down the altar or cutting down the Asherah, chopping it up and using it as a fire for the sacrifice. He did that at night. He is a man who is very much like his father, a man of great strength, a valiant man, a man of valor, but he still has those moments of weakness, and so I'm just real impressed with Gideon.
Joash, and I think you're right. I think he was had those altars and the poles there in the groves. I think he just kind of went along with the flow to get along with everybody. I think when Gideon chopped them down and used them for firewood, I think it was like throwing a bucket of cold water in Joash's face. It woke him up. And I think all along he knew about the Lord and knew that he was doing wrong. So he backed up his son. He was ready to do battle with the people, and he made a wise statement telling, hey, this guy, if Baal is a god, let him defend himself. What are you doing it for? You're right, Gideon was afraid. He did all this at nighttime for fear of his fellow citizens there in that town. So he had also some bravery involved, even though he did it at night. Just doing it, he risked his life. And here now we're going to find Gideon. He was, I think he was a pretty strong man. I think he was well-built, powerful man. I know he was there in the winery there where they pressed grapes to try to hide it from the Midianites when they came through. The Midianites only came through that area during the harvest season. They weren't there all the time. They let the Israelites plant the stuff and get it all squared away. And then when they harvested, then they came back and they took it all. And now here is Gideon preparing to do battle with these people. And we'll find that out in chapter 7 and chapter 8. And we'll spend more time than we have tonight on those two chapters. And we'll go from there. Anybody else have anything just to comment about or question?
Yeah, Ron, you asked whether they were taught of God. And it seems to me that Gideon was taught about the miracles of God, but he evidently hadn't been taught about how when they didn't do what God told them they were supposed to do, they were punished. And that they rose up a judge. And you would have thought that part of that would have been taught to them too. So he must have had holes in his education about God, because they just talked about the good things, not evidently the punishment and why you're being punished.
Yeah, they after Deborah and Barak, they had 40 years to enjoy the peace, and they had 42 years or 40 years to deteriorate right back into the old system that they had before. You remember that they're living in the middle of Canaanites. These people have, and that's the reason why the Lord left them there, was to test the Israelites. And they certainly got tested and they failed. And so they were doing this intermarrying, and they were worshiping their gods. They had the groves and they had the altars and all the stuff that they were sacrificing to. And they had just fallen right back into the same old groove that they had been in before. And so God here now has brought the nomadic tribes in to punish them for it. And they came in and left them absolutely nothing. They were pretty destitute. So it's God raised up. He did raise up a prophet. He wasn't a judge. He was a prophet. And it's not named. It just says there was a prophet that was raised up and condemned them for their sins, and maybe brought them up short there, made them aware of the problems that they had and why they had them.
Psalm 22s in the book of Judges. 6:22. Now Gideon perceived that he was the angel of the Lord. So Gideon said, "Alas, O Lord God, for I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face." And in 13:22, Manoah, which you'll get to, Ron, in due time, looks like, feared the same way as Gideon. And Manoah said to his wife, "We shall surely die because we have seen God," both of them, angels who performed a mighty act with this sacrifice on an altar.
You know, as I was looking at this, it appears to me that Gideon is asking the same kind of question that Daniel did. You know, Daniel understood that they had been sent into Babylonian captivity. It was for 70 years. It was punishment. And then close to the end of that, remember, Daniel asked God a question. "Are you still going to keep your promise? We haven't reformed to the extent that we should have reformed." So God tells Daniel, "Yes, I'll keep my promise." Could be that Gideon is asking the same question. And it could be that Gideon looked at what had happened in the past, and he knew God allowed his people to be punished, but God always raised up a deliverer. And could be that Gideon is asking God, I know what you've done in the past. Where's the deliverer? What have we done wrong? We've cried out to you and you're not there. And I read a book one time, had a kind of goofy title. It was written for junior high kids. And the title of the book was, "If God Loves Me So Much, Why Can't I Open My Locker?" And, you know, I have been in a position where I prayed hard and you wanted God to respond. And when there's not the kinds of responses that you know God is capable of, that causes you to have questions.
You know, the thing about Gideon that I am impressed with, and he reminds me, he's a leader. God is selecting him to be a leader. But it reminds me of Moses. Moses argued back with God 5 times. That didn't mean that he didn't have faith. It doesn't mean that Gideon didn't have faith. Gideon still acted on what God told him to do, even in fear. He was fearful. He did this at night, and he was fearful to move forward. So, but he was willing to be obedient. He needed the signs. I think he needed confirmation. This is very frightening. This is a very difficult position to be put in. And I think he's saying what Moses was saying is, why me? Why me? What's going on here? He's saying, I'm the least in my family. I'm the youngest person in my family. I'm certainly not a leader. I'm the last thing from a leader that you would ever want to pick. Why me? And I think that those kind of doubts are very normal. And I like that. I like that human side of these characters, that they're willing to be obedient to God. And when he did, like Carl said, when he recognized, you know what? This is the Lord. He was, you know, oh, sovereign Lord, I have seen the angel of the Lord face to face. And he was probably contrite and probably bowed down. And the Lord told him, you don't need to be afraid. You're not going to die. But don't you know that that was a nagging fear that he had anyway?
Oh, you bet. Sure. Absolutely.
With what Kim was saying, I think we see that God regularly chooses people who are contrary to what we believe would be leaders. Moses comes to mind, sure, but think about David. Again, one of the youngest of the sons there. They went through the entire family of sons looking for the king before they came to David. And then when you do pick the man who's ahead of taller than everybody else, Saul, he becomes a disappointment. He looked like a king, and he was a horrible king. He disappointed God. He disappointed the Israelites. And then in the New Testament, we look at Jesus, who was not comely. He wasn't somebody who you would expect would be a leader of the people, but the people flocked to him. And then we look at Paul, who was a staunch Pharisee, but did a complete 180 and went like a rocket booster in the other direction for Jesus. So God has a habit of showing that he can make somebody who is absolutely not a leader be the best leader.
Yeah,
so, does he do that with us today? I think he does. And I think we have to act in faith, and even when we're afraid, to step up and be a leader.
I think it's also true that real leaders don't relish being the leader. Mm-hmm. They're not looking for that position. Mm-hmm. They lead, but the great leaders, and I think Ted is right, You look at Moses, you look at David, you look at Gideon. They're people who looked at the people around them and said, surely some of these people are better leaders than I would be. But God, well, Samuel said, God looks on the heart. He doesn't look on things the way we do. He doesn't even look at things the way I look at myself.
When Kim was talking, it makes me think of the fact that there are times when we go, well, this needs to be done. Well, isn't there somebody else to do it other than me? I'm not that qualified. I don't, you know, maybe Kim brought it to me that maybe we all go through that same sort of struggle. You know, they say someone is going to be the person who does it in a congregation. Well, we all sort of have that little thing of Gideon in us, I think.
Ron?
Yes.
I think God showed a lot of mercy. He also shows guidance. He put them in for 7 years. They should be grateful that they weren't in captivity for 40 or 200 years. And then he showed them mercy. And he just asked them to do something. Like you said, it seems like it's time after time that they go astray. You said about with our children, are we bringing them up and everything? I know I work with my son and my grandson most every Saturday, just doing different things. And I have changed tremendously on how I talk and how I do things and everything else. And when I first read this, that he showed, you know, his strength, because a lot of people think, especially in my family, that I'm a very disciplinary person, which I am, but I don't really feel that when the kids were growing up, maybe that I showed enough mercy in a sense, because I was kind of strict on that way, in those kind of ways. And I think he shows tremendous when you're talking that he's talking about all these people there, all the Israelites and stuff, you know, because like you say, here they enjoyed things for over 40 years and then they just throw everything away. And then he teaches them some discipline and now they're begging, please, to come back. And he shows them mercy again. I think it shows us that, you know, as we've done things and as we do things, that we can show our kids that, you know, hey, we make mistakes, you know, and that we turn around and we can show the way we should have done things. I know my second son, he brings that up to me all the time because I'll tell him, well, I did this as a kid. Well, then sometimes he used to think that it was okay for him to do that and get away with it, but I told him that that's not the way it works. But I just look at this, at the mercy all the time that he shows, but he always is showing strength and he's just asking to do the right thing. But how many people take advantage of that? So anyway.
Well, we know that God made a covenant and God kept his covenant, never made a change. Never lost sight of that. God's covenant was, he had declared that covenant and he kept every bit of it. And it was the Israelites that fell short of God's expectations. I'm not sure that they really fell short of God's expectations. I think he knew that that was coming along. And yet he was faithful to them, even though he brought misery on them. It was punishment, yes, but also to make them come back to him as well. When the time was right, then there was God to rescue him. And he picked out people like Gideon, Ehud, Barak and Deborah, Othniel, he picked these people out. They weren't particularly powerful people, although Deborah was sort of a governor, judge, governor type thing. She judged the people. But most of them were just, they were just everyday people and never had anything special going for them. Ted brought up David and you know, Daniel was a young man when he came became important. Joseph, I think about Joseph, not next to the last son, but he was basically you know, just a young kid that didn't know a whole lot, and yet look what he became. And so, you know, we look at people like that, and God's choice, like Ted says, God's choice is most of the time not what we would think a choice would be. So he sees other things that we don't see. Gideon is an interesting fellow, and we'll find out about him in a little bit more detail when we study next week's chapter 7 and 8, and we'll see where his shortcomings are as far as well as his strengths. So interesting man, and we'll look forward to seeing what's inside of him. Anybody else have any comments?